We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
This is the CHGO Cubs podcast presented by PointsBet. Use code CHGO when you sign up to get two risk-free bets up to $2,000. Hello, everyone. My name is Corey. I am joined once again. Nice of him to join us live.
Wow, isn't that nice? Okay. I see how it is.
Well, it's just good to actually talk to you, Brendan.
Thank you, Corey. I know you love hearing me and talking
yes,
to me.
Yes, everybody knows that.
Yeah, I know.
Brendan and I are coming to you on Friday morning. It is September 30th. September is almost over. The baseball season, well, the regular season and the one for the Cubs is almost over. But we're getting a little bit of some final crumbs of joy, Brendan. And that crumb of joy here for us in late September is watching the 2022 Chicago Cubs sweep the Philadelphia Phillies at beautiful historic Wrigley Field in a series where the Phillies desperately need to win these games.
The Cubs finished 21-10 against the NL East this year, Corey. 21-10. That's the best winning percentage ever against the NL East in the Cubs' history. So this just means the Cubs deserve, I think, a playoff spot if the Phillies end up getting knocked out. I think the Cubs should just like take that spot.
Well, should the Cubs be the NL East champions is, I think, the question that we should all be asking.
Over the Mets and the Braves? Why not?
I think it's a fair question. They were 21-10 against the NL East. The highest win percentage in franchise history for the Cubs.
Yeah.
Are the Cubs the NL East champions? I think so. Get Rob Manfred on the phone, get Theo on the phone in the commissioner's office, and let's take a look at some of these rules.
Well, Theo's all about fun, right? So I think like you can make the convincing argument, put the Cubs in the playoffs, and there you go. Mm-hmm. More fun.
Yeah. There's like in soccer around the world where if you perform poorly enough, you get relegated. I think that's kind of the angle we're taking here, right?
Yeah.
If your whole division plays this poorly against a team that is now not as many games under 500 as they once were, but 16 games under 500 as we record this, you don't win the division. They do.
All right, Cubs get a first round bye.
There we go. Yeah, you heard it here first. Now, the counter to that, I do want to get your thought on this. The problem with this is that it directly helps the Milwaukee Brewers. How do we feel about this?
Yeah, cognitive dissonance at its finest, but I have enough faith that Milwaukee won't do anything in the playoffs that I don't really care about it. But I could be wrong. I could be led astray by the Cubs here.
Right. My thing on this is we never want to help the Brewers directly or indirectly. Their season ending with a playoff bid and misery and all of that is what we're all hoping for. That being said, the Cubs scored 8 runs in this series. I'm not saying they were trying to help the Phillies out, but it's not like they were, beating them all over the field here, right? So there's not much. What I'm saying is there's not really that much the Cubs can do beyond that, right? They scored 2 runs in two of these games, right? Like, yeah. At that point, if the Phillies can't win any of these games, it's kind of on them, you know?
Well, the Cubs starting pitching is so good, you know, arguably the best starting pitching in the league. So, you know,
kind of. Yes, we keep updating that. It is now 3 points.
I mean, seriously, it's that good. The ERA and like all the numbers, like surprisingly, is among the best in the league in the second half.
Oh, no, we've talked about that. It is third. Yeah. The rotation ERA is third in Major League Baseball it's since crazy. The All-Star break. 3.04 ERA after the game on Thursday started by Javier Assad. So this starting group just keeps getting it done. And in this series in particular, like this is, you know, no slouch of a lineup. You've got some really good hitters in this Phillies lineup. And, you know, make of this second half for the Cubs what you will. But, the numbers don't lie.
They don't lie. I mean, all hail Tommy Ottavi. This is the product you get when he's in the dugout. So Ottavi, Moskowitz, Greg Breslow, Jacobson, all those guys are doing just phenomenal work.
Right. So we will break down those three games. Brendan will take us into the pitch lab to break down some of the guys that we saw. Maybe want to talk a little bit about, Nico's back, Seiya is Nico. Back, Ian Happ is, we've talked about his defense, I think, a couple weeks ago, and he continues to play really well. The numbers are really good, so maybe talk a little bit about that. Before we get into this series, though, Brendan, we did hear from Jason Hayward on Thursday. He spoke to the media, kind of just talking about his time as a Cub. We didn't really hear from him when the decision was made by the Cubs. So here he was kind of talking about this. There was a lot going on. He's talking about wanting to play still in the future. He also talked about maybe getting involved in an ownership role in the future with the Cubs specifically, he mentioned. So that was an interesting kind of comment. I'm curious mm-hmm. about that. But then there was also a lot of discussion from him and David Ross, of course, about, and I don't know if you are aware of this, Brendan, but when they won the World Series in 2016.
2016, yeah.
The Cubs.
World Series.
Yeah.
The World Series,
the Chicago
right?
Cubs yeah. did, okay. yeah.
Just making sure.
And, so they talked about, of course, Jason Hayward's speech in the locker room during the rain delay, which we've all heard about. It's written in books, and, all the guys talk about it all the time. But still, it was nice to reminisce about that stuff, I think. One detail that Jason pointed out that obviously caught my eye was that after they won, John Lester got them a bunch of very nice wine that Ooh. Had the telegram that was written by the guy that had the billy goat that wasn't allowed into the, that starts the whole curse of the billy goat, if you believe in any of that.
Which is over now, yeah.
Right, because the Cubs won the World Series.
Won the World Series, correct.
Yes. But I love... And, obviously I found a way to make this discussion of Jason Hayward's press conference today about John Lester, wont to do. But I love that that's John's move, right? Win the World Series, here's a bunch of wine. I'm leaving the Cubs and signing somewhere else. I'm going to buy Miller Lite for everybody in the city. I remember when Adbert Alzolay, I can't remember if it was his first outing or his first win, or it was some sort of first. He got him a really yeah. expensive bottle of alcohol or champagne, maybe. I remember Ooh. Adbert posting it with like John's autograph, like congrats on the first. So I just love that it's, John's default is, did you do something cool? Here's some expensive alcohol,
Now, what kind of wine do you think it is? Maybe like a nice cab or something?
Oh,
I don't think John's like a Pinot Noir guy, though.
I don't know.
I'm guessing cab.
That's a good question.
Gotta find that out.
I know he's a light beer man, but I would guess that he has more expensive wine taste than his beer taste.
Well, maybe we can talk to Ryan Herrera, our guy at CHGO, and find out the inside scoop. That might be something worth following up on.
How is he going to get in? Oh, he could ask David Ross. I was going to say, I don't know if our guy Ryan Herrera has a connection to John Lester. If he does, he's been withholding it from me.
We got to keep you away from that.
Maybe that's why I don't know about it.
Yeah, you're like, what?
But yeah, so I don't think that there was a lot necessarily. It was very nice to hear, obviously you and I and pretty much everybody had kind of agreed with the decision to move on from Jason Hayward. A lot of us, I think, maybe thought they waited a bit too long on that, but that's not really the point of this discussion today. But it was good that he had a chance to sort of speak about this, speak to the media, and speak to the fans a little bit and get to reminisce about winning the World Series here and about his time here. And I think in particular, one of the things that stuck out to me from Hayward's time speaking today was talking about how, you know, this is obviously not like an official goodbye to the fans because right now he's still with the organization, right? And how emotional that'll be and things like that. But I did want to read this quote. Jason said, "It brings a smile to my face knowing that I had a chance to play in front of these fans. It was really gratifying because good times, bad times, they're still right there waiting for something positive to happen. And we earned the right for them to be right there, even more on the edge of their seats." So through all the ups and downs, one of the things that you and I always talked about with Jason was how he handled some of the bad times, as he mentions, always with class, always with a position of leadership in mind and all of that. And I think it's, you know, I'm a sucker for quotes from guys talking about how great Cub fans are, right?
Yeah, no doubt. Well, I think with Hayward too, the mark he's made on the city beyond just baseball with his charities and his integration within the community is going to be long lasting. And I wouldn't be surprised that once his career is over from the playing side, that he's back within this community in some way. He mentioned perhaps being an executive or owner, but I could see him also hanging around the team during spring training, as we see with like Rick Sutcliffe, you know, and Billy Williams in the past. And he could be very well part of this Cubs lore beyond just his playing days. And I think there's value to that. Everyone you hear talk about Hayward is always in glowing fashion, and there is value to that. And I think it could help guys, younger guys who may need a voice like Hayward in their ear to help them adapt and get to the next level. So I fully expect Hayward to be involved in some capacity. And I do hope it is with the Cubs. I do think there is value in him long-term.
Yeah, I mean, I'm curious if he wants to be a minority owner within the team. You know, like, what's the philosophy on spending money, Jason?
Maybe he wants to just take over Tom Ricketts.
Want to know, how are you pro spending money and go pushing over the luxury tax all the time? Just let us know your feelings on that.
So owner Hayward will be spending $500 million every year.
Hey, it works for me. There you go. Yeah, that's the philosophy I want to know. But let's get into this series with the Phillies here. 2-1, the final on Tuesday in the opening game of this series. Another gem from Marcus Stroman, 7 innings, 4 hits, 1 run, 1 walk, 6 strikeouts. As we've been kind of talking about, Brendan, like for this last good while here, like Stroman's the dude you thought he was when you signed him. Like, you can go look at some of those not so great starts, maybe in April in the freezing rain here, or I think his first start back from COVID, or, you know, the IL. You can look at that if you want, but the body of work here for the majority has been exactly as advertised, exactly as he's been throughout his career, and someone who I am very, very excited to watch pitch in 2023.
Yeah, and we saw a lot of the same features he's been showcasing recently: heavy sinker, heavy slider. He's gone back to those two pitch types as he used to throw when he's with New York, and even back then in Toronto. So it's a continuation of what we've seen, and another step and another reason just to be ultra confident about Stroman. And that signing of $71 million over 3 years, in hindsight, I think it will be worth every single penny. Even as the deal was made, I personally was surprised it was that inexpensive. When you see guys like Gausman, although he's like an ace-like pitcher, go for 9-digit salaries. Mm-hmm. Stroman having the consistency from year to year to get his starts, to be consistent, to go deep into games is so valuable. And it makes me wonder if he had not gotten COVID and if we didn't have a lockout during last offseason, just how good his numbers might be.
Yeah.
And it's still good as is. This is really encouraging, Corey.
Yeah, absolutely. Scoreless innings following him from Brandon Hughes and Manny Rodriguez. That's Manny's third save of the year. The Cubs getting their runs in this one. Christopher Morel's 15th homer of the year. That would not be his last in the series. And a Yan Gomes RBI double. Wednesday, the Cubs winning 4-2, that behind another strong start from Hayden Wisniewski, his third win already of the year in his young MLB career. 5 innings, 6 hits, 1 run, 2 walks, and 3 strikeouts. So we'll break him down further when we jump out of this. Following him, Mark Leiter Jr. gives up a run in an inning and a third. Adbert Alzolay, a scoreless inning with 2 strikeouts. Brandon Hughes, another scoreless inning with 3 strikeouts. And a scoreless 2/3 of an inning for Manny Rodriguez, his 4th save of the year. The Cubs getting their 4 runs in this one via a Yan Gomes grounding into a force out. Christopher Morel with his 16th home run of the year. That was of the 3-run variety. All of those runs coming in the 5th, and that would be all the Cubs would need. In the finale, 2-0 on Thursday afternoon, Javier Assad picks up his 2nd win of the year. 5 innings, 5 hits, no runs, 2 walks, 3 strikeouts. Michael Rucker, a scoreless inning, and Keegan Thompson, 3 scoreless innings. 1 hit, 2 walks, and 3 strikeouts for Keegan. Keegan picks up his 1st save. So nice to see there. The Cubs getting these 2 runs on Thursday via a Patrick Wisdom double and an Ian Happ RBI single. So that's it. Not a lot of runs, but not a lot of runs given up. As we mentioned, this rotation just continues to do their thing. And I did want to read an interesting note from, because this is like something we've paid a lot of attention to, a good tweet from friend of the podcast, Brian Smith at Cub Prospects on Twitter, Cubs Prospects guru for Bleacher Nation. He said on Thursday, all 9 innings pitched by the Cubs and 22 of the offense's 31 at-bats came from homegrown players. He goes on to say, Brian does, that, you know, obviously this year has not gone as we wanted it to, but it did provide the investment in player development that I think we were all looking for. And I thought that was a good way to sum it up. You know, and even you look at some of these guys that got opportunities in the pen, you see Brandon Hughes out there in a couple games doing good work. His ERA is right around 3 for a guy that they brought up this season. He's been dazzling. Manny Rodriguez really settling in nicely as he's come back this time, this stint in the MLB, getting the opportunity to get some saves and succeeding in those. And then, of course, you know, the final game on Thursday, all of these guys, you know, that you developed, Javier Assad, Michael Rucker, and Keegan Thompson, and they pitched a shutout, Brendan. I know that, you know, you look at like that ERA number in the second half and like you look at this roster and all of this, and I kind of talked about this on Sunday, where it's like, you know, you can't just roll this roster over and be like, well, they're playing great in the second half, so what, you know, they're just going to keep winning, right? Like, but this, they have used a lot of this time really productively, and it, I think, really bodes well more than anything to the depth that this team should have when they do go out and make significant adjustments, that you are able to bring guys up from your system, have them cover all 9 innings of a baseball game, and shut out a team that's desperately trying to make the playoffs.
Yeah, you look back when they were winning games in the mid-2010s, 2015, 2016, 2017, 2018, the starting pitching was so top-heavy and stable, which was a luxury. No one got injured. Lester was that consistent guy. Arrieta, 2015, 2016, 2017, started every 5th day. You're getting starts from Kyle every 5th day. They didn't break. And that's a rarity in this day and age. And it's not something to expect going forward. What this current Cubs team has is a dozen starting pitching candidates for next season. A dozen. Corey, they don't have that top shelf guy right now. Stroman is that consistent, maybe top 3 guy in your rotation, but they don't have that top shelf guy. But if they get that top shelf guy, they get maybe 2 pitchers, then you have this enormous depth. And you learned about Adrian Sampson. You learned about Javier Assad. You learned that Killian has to go through these potential adjustment phases. You learned so much about Steele and Thompson and Wisniewski. And you see how the pieces to the puzzle can fit when you supplement this depth, which is now here and projectable to some degree with stable free agent or trade starting pitchers for next season. And I think it should give a lot of people confidence that this team is ready to win the division right now. And this second half and the entire season as a whole was so useful to get that information and to get that confidence that hopefully will allow Jed to go out this offseason to actually add to that group.
Yeah, and I think I'm glad we got to a place, because there was definitely times throughout the year where too much of the playing time was not being utilized to at least see what guys have, right? And I think we've gotten to a place over the last maybe month plus or so where you're really seeing a lot of this time used to just give guys a shot, right? And see what they can do. And it's not as many older veterans or guys who, you know, just are not going to be a part of any of the future plans. And I think for some of these guys, it's like, who knows what type of role they play. But, you know, like, if you look at some of these games, like, some of these guys have like, in the game on Thursday, right? Like, Michael Rucker has had an up and down season. He's been asked to do a lot, right? He's been one of those guys that David Ross has asked to pitch multiple innings at times, single innings at times. He's got a 4.1 ERA on the season. So, like, is he a huge piece of your bullpen next year if you're completing for the playoffs? You know, probably not. But he came into the game today and, you know, is pitching in some big spots, right? And he has a clean inning, no hits, no walks, just a strikeout. He gets his fifth hold of the year. Like, even if he's just the guy who plays that, as I mentioned a couple episodes ago, that Justin Grimm up and down from Iowa all the time kind of role, like, that's still a worthwhile exercise, right? You definitely found guys on this pitching staff who I think you're looking at like, okay, like, this guy's a starter in our competitive rotation, maybe starting playoff games, things like that. This guy maybe is our closer or our bullpen weapon, whatever. So you've obviously used it productively for that. We see that, you know, Keegan Thompson in the game on Thursday, the way they're using Alzolay, Wisniewski, etc. But even guys like Rucker, Assad, Samson, Mark Leiter Jr., right? Like, just getting a look at these guys and seeing what they can do and seeing where they are able to have some successes, that can be valuable in the long run when you're just trying to build out depth through your major league team and even beyond to that bigger roster that becomes necessary when guys get hurt or all that other stuff.
Well, it's about adding guys that are slightly better than replacement level to fill in a stop gaps for certain guys that may not be able to go every fifth day. Or if there's a nagging injury that requires a 10 to 15 day IL stint, then these guys can come up, including like Assad or Leiter Jr. And we've seen that. And we've seen that those two particular guys, they have in their own history, good command. Assad pitches backwards, so he's unique in that regard. Goes with the cutter, the sinker, curveball. And then for Leiter, he's had great command. He's grading above average on the ability to hit the edges on most of his pitch types. So this is valuable. And it all goes to the hope of not relying on them, but it all goes to the hope of adding to this group. And when you look at the current number of starting pitchers on this Cubs team that has qualified for innings this year, Corey, zero. The list is zero. They're putting up these numbers, these starting pitching numbers, with zero qualified starting pitchers from an innings perspective. That is insane. That speaks to the volume of guys they have in this system and the work that the coaches and the minor league coaches and the infrastructure has put in to get this team translated value. That is an enormous accomplishment.
Yeah. You've used a lot of this time to help build, I think, a foundation for a good and competitive team. And not just a good competitive team, but a competitive cycle, right?
Right.
Whether you like to use the word competitive windows or not, it depends on, you know, what kind of language you feel like using. But you want to build a competitive cycle. And like, some of these guys may play a certain role one year, a bigger role the next year, et cetera, et cetera. But I think the fact that we've gotten to this point where you look at these box scores. I read the box score from Thursday where it was Assad and Rucker and Keegan Thompson. I mean, even you look at Wednesday too, Wisniewski, Leiter Jr., Alzolay, Hughes, Rodriguez. Like,
yeah.
Tuesday, Stroman, Hughes, Rodriguez. Like, these are all names that should be contributing next year.
And for years beyond that, right. too. They could be on team control for the next 4 to 5 years,
Corey. And they may
have
just knocked the Phillies out of the playoffs.
It's crazy.
These guys, yeah.
It's crazy.
I mean, if we're talking about specific performances, and we do have to get to our first ad break here in a second, but yeah. like in particular, the one that stood out for me, obviously we're so dialed in to Hayden Wisniewski. We're going to talk about him, Keegan Thompson, Albert Alzolay, because those are just some of the bigger names, I guess, at this point. But dude, watching Brandon Hughes pitch, some of the pitches he's throwing to like Bryce Harper and the way he's navigating these things, like he's a dude. Man, like I don't know yeah. where he's gonna yeah. fit in the bullpen next year, but like you combine what you're seeing from him, what you're seeing from someone like Manny Rodriguez, and then you add in the yeah. fact that the Cubs have shown this ability to go out and identify veterans or cheaper relievers, reclamation relievers, however you want to call it, like they've got some really interesting stuff as they go forward here and try to decide how they want to build out that bullpen.
Very interesting. Okay, quick break here from our sponsor, PointsBet. This football season, PointsBet is bringing you a better way to bet live on games, which means before this ad is over, you can place a live same-game parlay, bet on the next drive to be a touchdown, and cash out on your live second-half over bet. With PointsBet, you have access to more live football markets than ever before. Build the perfect live same-game parlay by combining your favorite bets anytime during the game, including spreads, totals, player props, and more. Choose the outcome of the next drive and next points with PointsBet Lightning Bets. So whether you are on the move or on the couch, do it live on PointsBet. Download the PointsBet app today and sign up with code CHGO to get your first two bets risk-free up to $2,000. And if you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants to help, call 1-800-GAMBLER for crisis counseling and referral services. Our next sponsor is Game Time. Game Time is the easiest app to use to get tickets to any sporting event. I was looking over the past week and seeing all the fans coming out to the CSGO Bears tailgate. And I was hearing from Cody, from Ryan, a lot of these guys were trying to get tickets to even like the Cubs game that night. And they can use Game Time, which is really easy to use. You know that you're getting the best deal possible when you use this particular app. And it's the hottest new ticketing site that makes it easier than ever to score the best deals on tickets to, let's say, Cubs games, Bears games. The Blackhawks are coming up. The Bulls are coming up in the next few months here to concerts that you may want to see or shows in general. So I've used this a few times. It's really simple to use. And if you want to get tickets last second, this is the app to do it, Corey. If you love CSGO, then you will love Game Time. The best way to support us is by buying your tickets through the link in this description and join over 15 million people who have downloaded the Game Time app and scored the best seats to all your favorite events.
All right, so since we're talking pitching, I guess let's just stay there. Yes. What did you see from Hayden Wisniewski in this one? Albert Alzolay, Keegan Thompson. We talked about these guys a lot, so if there's nothing new or groundbreaking, that's okay. But I always like to give you an opportunity to put on the proverbial pitching lab coat here.
So Wisniewski did have his best stuff. I think like anyone who was watching that game kind of saw that. The command was maybe a little bit shakier, but the big takeaway is he competed. Like going against Bryce Harper, going against Rhys Hoskins, and going against like Schwarber, and the ability to fight back on, let's say, some unfortunate base hits, which I forgot what inning it was, but there was a few like bloop base hits that got him into damage. And he was able to escape ultimately a big inning that was not really induced by his lack of pitching. It was induced by just nonsense BS base hits. He was able to get out of that. And then against the Phillies, it's always interesting to point out these pitch breakdowns by Wisniewski because he has so many pitch types. The Phillies are mostly a right-heavy team. They do have Schwarber. They do have Harper, but the majority of their guys are righties. And he ended up using mostly sinkers and sliders, which is his righty mix when he has a heavy righty team, but he was still able to showcase the four seam and the cutter specifically to Harper and to Schwarber. So this was probably the most equal pitch mix of the season for him. He threw 33% sliders, 33% sinkers, 15% four seams, 14% cutters, and then he ended up throwing four changeups in his 85 pitches, and he got 10 whiffs across all these pitch types. And this is the dynamic repertoire that we're talking about. And I remember when I was on the show with Luke and Cody and Ryan, last week, we were rating our guys, like our top starting pitching guys from this young group. And a lot of them had Steele, which is totally fair given his consistency and his adaptation this year. But Steele, while he has been successful and he has adapted to unique fastballs, he doesn't have this pitch mix that Wisniewski has. So I rated Wisniewski as my top guy because he does have this dynamic pitch mix that also Stroman has, which is why I like Stroman so much. And you saw it on display against the Phillies. So this was really encouraging to see him use five different pitch types, four of which really frequent against one of the better hitting lineups in the league, Corey, and have success doing it as a late month September call-up going through these lineups for the first time in his career. This was really impressive by Wisniewski.
I was thinking about, not that we're big football guys necessarily, but I was thinking about, I think it was after their first win, the Dolphins' new coach, Mike McDaniel, who gets a lot of attention because he's, I don't want to say nerdy, but he's more of an analytic guy, right? Like, yeah, he's kind of like, yeah, you know, he's your kind of guy, Brendan.
Okay, let's hold on. Okay.
Because I'm notoriously not nerdy. Everybody knows that. But I think it was after their first win, he said something like, you know, I'm kind of hoping we face a little adversity this week because I want to see how we respond. It's early in the season and we have the time to see how we respond to something like that, you know? And, you know, not that you don't want to win every game 40-0 if you're the Miami Dolphins, but you might face some adversity. So let's see how we do. That's kind of how I felt about Wisniewski last night.
Yeah, man.
Right? We've seen him dominate. We've seen him have his best stuff and, you know, strutting off the mound, striking out nine guys and all that other stuff. It's good to see that, you know, he got in some jams, had to pitch with some guys on third base, had to pitch with runners on and less than two outs, had to pitch in big spots to dangerous hitters, right? I think it's good to see that. And obviously the results were still good, his overall line, even if it's not as great as some of his other outings have been. But I think that was the first thing I thought of was, hey, like this season doesn't mean anything. This is a good development time for him. And it's good to kind of put him in some spots where he's got to put out some fires. Let's see what you got, right?
Yeah. I mean, how do you feel about when you look at Wisniewski, you look at Steele, you look at Keegan, all these young guys, right? It's hard maybe to effectively convince people like why I'm more excited about Wisniewski. And it's not as a way to condemn like Steele or Thompson. It's a way to really amplify just how useful this pitch mix is. When you watch these games, Corey, and you see like the diverse pitch repertoire, doesn't that like give you like a sense of confidence? You know, like if he doesn't have feel for one pitch one day, or if the lineup changes because the manager is putting in lefties in the middle of the game, that he can get through this. And I think for me, that's really important to mitigate these peaks and valleys that other Cubs teams have showed throughout the years.
Absolutely. And that was one of the things he said, I think, after his first outing, where he said, I just need to, you know, trust my stuff and pump strikes, because that's the best way to stay at the major league level and stay in a rotation or whatever you're trying to do, is by understanding, like, my stuff is good. Even if it's not its best day, my command isn't as fine as I want it to be, or things aren't breaking exactly as I want, stuff is still good. And you still have that power fastball. Like, you still have good stuff to rely on. So challenge hitters and make them beat you and trust that stuff. So, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's really difficult. I know he was talking after the game, after his start the other day. Like, you know, he's I think they were asked about, he was asked about being in the rotation. And he was like, look, I don't even know if I'm making the team, like, out of camp. Like, I don't know. Like, I'm going to do whatever I got to do. And we'll you know, work hard. And obviously, that's the goal. But we got to see when we get there. So I love his attitude. But I think regardless of what his role is going to be or what's expected of him in 2023, like, is there a way for this early period for a starting pitching prospect to go better? Sure, he could be throwing a no-hitter every night, right? But realistically, with what we've seen on a relative basis, like, this has just gone so freaking well for the Cubs. Yeah, I mean, what Scott Efros was great, but this looks like a real move by Jed Hoyer. And I get why the Yankees did it. They're going to be in the playoffs. They need to shore up that bullpen and stuff like that. But like, you just watch Wisniewski, his attitude, his stuff, his repertoire. And, you know, Luke asked me on the postgame show on Wednesday night, you know, if he was my number one that I'm most excited about. And I said, yeah, of course. Like, I'm indoctrinated by you. I get all these text messages.
I'm sorry.
It's impossible for me to not think that way because I'm getting a dissertation and my iMessage at 3 a.m. about his pitch break and all this other stuff. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, I got to tell someone this. You know, you're the only one that will listen to me. But that was good. And then Albert Alzolay, kind of the same type of adversity that you're mentioning there, Corey. You want to see like Adber face different lineups and use different pitch mixes. And my expectation when he came up was just to stay healthy through September. I did not expect him to use these different types of pitch types. So cutter, slider, four seam, and sinker is what he threw in 14 pitches on Wednesday. And he threw three sinkers, four cutters, and three fastballs. So all equally used, but it's that cutter that he's using more. And he's using two different slider variations. So he has a more slurvy slider, a harder slider, and then a baby slider, if you want to call it like the cutter. That's three pitches that break one direction, Corey. And he's using those pitches more than he ever has when he was healthy. So I'm surprised to see Adber continuing to do this. And I'm encouraged because that cutter, he used those pitches against lefties. And he had so many problems last year when he was doing well even against left-handed batters. All but one of his home runs given up were to left-handed batters. And that cutter, we've heard from Moscow saying that pitch will be important for Adber to get past those platoon splits, having another breaking pitch, either be it a curve or this slider variation, has more depth on that pitch. We're seeing that as well. So we're not only seeing Adber showcase the ability to be healthy, to throw fast, which is what he's doing, but also he's trying new pitch types. This is really encouraging as well. And in the same vein, when you're talking about starting pitching candidates or talking about guys that can go multiple innings, if Adber gets through the next week, which he probably will, I kind of have some confidence that going into 2023, he'll at least get the first shot at this multiple inning guy out of the bullpen, and it's another layer of depth for this team.
Works for me. Yeah. I mean, you just see a lot of teams that have weapons like that and how they've used certain guys like that, and I would love for that to be Edward. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, I mean, overall, like, you see the Phillies get swept by the Cubs. You see the starting pitching showcase, new pitch types, some adversity from Wisniewski and Stroman continuing to look good. Things are pointing up. Like, I feel so confident about this depth. I don't feel confident in like the pitching as a finished product yet. I do want to see those free agents signed, but I keep going back to the point that if the Cubs have some adversity and injuries or some guys kind of regress a little bit next year, I'm just always going back to the foundation of they have a dozen guys that can get innings with a decent possibility of being successful. It's really good to see.
When I'm kind of thinking too, like, obviously you needed to trade them to give some of these guys the opportunity, but like, you look at the way this the bullpen has been up and down because you're trying so many of these guys, but like, you look at the way it kind of worked in this Philly series and the particular guys that were utilized, the stuff we've seen from Rodriguez, Brandon Hughes, Alzolay, Thompson, etc., coming out of the bullpen. Like, okay, let's go. Like now you mix in a guy like the way David Robertson was performing, right? A guy like Scott Efros, the way he was performing. You go out and sign another one, two, you know, top of the line starting pitcher, maybe another, you know, middle back end of the rotation starting pitcher for a little added depth. Like, I'm liking the shape of that, right?
And maybe some of these guys will get traded too. Like, we're not talking about that. Not in the same type of high value return that you saw from like Scott Efros, but you do have guys that are under team control. They're having success. Brandon Hughes is one of them that may be used in part of a trade package of guys to bring back high value pitchers. Like, you can think of like Ohtani, for example, if the Angels want to get back immediate value, both from like the bullpen and, you know, the rotation, if they want to go deeper as well. So there's value just for the team is in general on the actual Cup side, but also in trade possibilities this offseason.
Right. You know, before we hit our second ad break here, I probably should have just mentioned this when we were talking about Hayward in the 2016 World Series that the Cubs won.
Yes, Cubs, yeah.
Pedro Strop and Miguel Montero at the game on Wednesday night. Electric vibes.
Look at that.
I don't have much to add to that, but just I love seeing those guys at Wrigley Field. I think they put them on the video board. Just love seeing those guys.
Yeah. And if you want to go to the remaining Cubs games, let's say you're on the road and you want to see these guys finish off their season, you can get tickets through the Game Time app. If you ever dreamed of getting a seat, maybe this is like a really good seat on, you know, the dugout or near home plate, maybe this is the time to do it. If you want to go to the Bears game on Sunday and you want to get good tickets at the 50-yard line, this might be the time to do it as well. And the best chance to get these seats is through Game Time. You will not find a better deal this season or perhaps right now during this part of the baseball season. And this app, you know you're going to get the best deal because it's created by fans for the fans, and it guarantees the lowest price. If you love CHGO, then you will love Game Time. This is the best way to support us as well. Join over 15 million people who have downloaded the Game Time app and score the best seats to all your favorite events.
All right, Brendan, let's talk a little bit about the offense. We can. Yes. It's nice to see Seiya Suzuki back out there.
Yep.
Of course, you know, he had a baby, so that's cool for him.
Congrats.
In the lineup on Thursday, 2 for 3, he scores 2 runs. Also, some nice plays in the field. Had that one moment in the game on Thursday. Kind of felt like the Phillies were going to break through there, but Seiya with a nice play.
He looks more comfortable out there, too, by the way.
I think so.
I sense
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so, which I think is fair, right? Like, right field at Wrigley Field is not an easy
it's
place
tough.
To play.
And the well, the sunlight, everything, the
right.
wind.
So, yeah, hopefully as he gets more comfortable, he starts to look a little better out there and just rate a little better, because I think some of those ratings have yeah. not been as kind as you would have expected to him to be toward him. And I think he's right. a better fielder than that. So I think with time, he should be perfectly fine out there. And, you know, again, like we talked about this a few weeks ago, I think, but Ian Happ just continues making plays out there. And I got to tell you, Brendan, like at the time when we talked about this, I think David Ross said something about him being in consideration for the Gold Glove. And I won't rope you into this because I don't remember. You probably did. But I will only eat the crow myself. I scoffed at that. I was like, okay, oh, sure, so David. Like, you look at the numbers, like the defensive run saved and stuff. Like, maybe he could be in that conversation. Like the sliding play he made today in left field going into the wall, like, that is a really nice play. And for a guy who has always rated negatively on defense, I think he's at like plus 12 defensive run saved yeah. right now after being maybe yeah. like -2 or -3. Last year, like, all the credit in the world to Ian Happ, man, because that was one of those areas that you and I talked about a lot. We wanted to see him kind of make some improvements there, and there you go. I mean, he's made the improvements.
I mean, massive. Well, you see his outs above average is in the 80th percentile, Corey. I mean, last season in 2021, we knew there were issues. He was in the 6th percentile. So the jump from the 6th percentile all the way up to the 80th is a huge boost, and it does point to the work ethic that he's put in as well. And this, combined with the office improvements and the ability to make more contact this year, you got to give the guy a ton of credit. He's exceeding my expectations. I also scoffed at David Ross saying Gold Glove. I didn't realize how good the numbers were, Corey. Like, I've been so conditioned to expect that Happ's defense was like mediocre at best, but below league average, that this kind of escaped me to see how well he's been doing from an actual statistical perspective.
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, you and I need to be careful when we scoff, I guess, is the
sometimes.
Lesson. But rarely. Yeah. You and I are rarely. Usually correct, but occasionally.
Yeah. Every single time besides this.
Yeah, maybe yeah. we're a little wrong. Yeah, yeah. I don't know. At the time, I was like, it sounds like a manager hyping up his player. And then, like, you look at the numbers, you're like, well, I don't know, you know, I don't know if he's going to win the Gold Glove or, you know, how that all even works. Usually those, that seems like kind of a sham, right? The way that they give that out. But he's definitely vastly improved, which I also think is a big deal as you think about how the Cubs trying to figure out exactly how they're laying out their outfield and their offense as we go forward here. You know, obviously Ian's not a free agent until 2024, but the Cubs, you know, will obviously have to decide tendering a contract, going to arbitration or avoiding arbitration, whatever they decide to do there. The fact that he is much improved on the defensive side from where he once was, and you look at, you know, his numbers are still pretty solid for the year on offense. 270, 339 OBP, 443 slug, 339 weighted on base average, and a 119 WRC plus. That's after a 1-for-4 on Thursday. Like, it's a solid player. He's about a three, he's almost a 3.5 win player right now. Like, that's quite solid, especially fact that he's, you know, going to be making arbitration money unless the Cubs decide to, you know, look at a different contract or whatever they decide to do here.
I mean, if he continues to do this through next season, then a contract extension makes sense, right? I think from my perspective, I want to see a larger sample even than this, both from a defensive perspective and from like an offense perspective. But if the ability for Hap to play above average level defense and make this amount of contact and have more power, which we've seen in the second half, then yeah, you can make a convincing argument that he deserves a contract extension and it's in the best interest of the Cubs. It's just over the years, we've seen that defense be pretty weak and he had to hit to a really high standard to outweigh that defensive deficiency. But if that's not part of the equation anymore, then if the money makes sense, then I think it might make sense for the Cubs to extend him. I just want to see more from an offensive point of view to really commit to, like, you know, 4+ years to do that.
Yeah, certainly one of the at least potential decisions they'll have to make in this offseason, or they can punt it to the following offseason if they just...
Well, I think, I mean, I don't know how you feel about it now because we'll, you know, think our minds will change when the offseason progresses, but my inkling is I don't want to do it yet. Like, I want to see him go through next season, and you may risk him going to free agency, but I don't know. I feel as if Hap likes the Cubs so much and the city and the organization that even if we do risk him going to free agency and he does well next season, that there is still a good chance he comes back. But I want to be a little cautious given the outfield potential over the next few years. I want to be a little bit cautious and make sure that Hap's defense and contact and power is sustainable through, you know, a decent part of next season before you commit that type of money with all the options available.
Yeah, I think that is definitely fair. Obviously, you know, this wasn't exactly when he returned, but I assume you're pleased to see Nico Hoerner back out there. Not his best offensive series, but just good that he's healthy.
Well, he's healthy. He's playing defense. He had a base hit up the middle. That was pretty nice to see. Numbers still look good, and he's out there playing baseball. So I think that's, to me, the most important aspect of this. He feels comfortable. He's healthy. He wants to play and get those innings to finish off the season. That's what you want to see. So overall, it's great to see him back out there.
Right. One thing that I did want to check in on, because we did talk about it a good bit, is that Franmil Reyes' numbers have tanked a bit. You know, he's now down around in the 80s, if you're looking at WRC Plus, in his time with the Cubs. So I think, you know, for a little while, right, it looked like he might have played his way into at least some of the discussion, like, do you keep him around to be a DH, like that type of thing. As his numbers trend downward toward what they were in Cleveland, now his strikeout rate is not nearly as high, but the power just isn't there, Brendan, and that's, of course, what you're looking for him to provide. Why that is, I'm not particularly sure, but I... Yeah, there's definitely, you know, you're casting a lot more doubt on whether he's going to be in that conversation.
Well, he has to go through arbitration again. You know, his base is $4.5 million, so you can't go below that. So the expectation is if you want to bring back Franmil next year, you have to spend $4.6 million to do that. He's still under team control for one more year after that. It's $4.5 million. They have so much flexibility on this payroll that, yes, the decline in September might be worrisome, but there's still so much potential there that I'm willing to spend $4.6 million and see if we can continue to improve his power and get back to that point. He's going to the opposite field way more often this year, and that continued with the Cubs. So I want to see the familiarity with him and the coaching staff and the hitting side, which he has familiarity with in his past experience. I want to see that go through an offseason where he can make maybe more changes. And I'm disappointed to see him do this poorly recently. But we know the power potential is there, and we know that for a decent part of the season with the Cubs, we saw what he could do. So for $4.6 million, this team needs pop. Outside of dramatic changes to this positional core, I think $4.6 million, despite these struggles, is still probably worth it.
I remember reading over at Bleacher Nation, and I don't think I don't remember. I don't think it was the complete suggestion that this was why, but it was just, I think, Brett maybe thinking aloud as maybe a potential thing. Like, you know, we have seen a lot go on with the baseball itself, right? And yeah. I think he was just wondering if maybe some of the reason that the power seems to be not there in as much quantity as it has been for Franmil in some of these past years is that maybe it's the baseball.
Maybe. I don't know.
Who knows, right? None of us know anything about the baseball because it's all over the place, right? But something I guess we're thinking about. I mean, what the conclusion of that is, I don't know. Because at this point, do we think that the baseball is going to be the same or different next year?
We
have no idea.
It's changing every single season.
Right. You know? But it is something that I think I just bring that up because it's something I often forget when I'm thinking about a lot of this stuff. That over the last few years, there's obviously been so much discussion about that. And that stuff is going to affect certain guys differently, right? When you think about when the ball was juiced and it was jumping out on stuff that looked like pop-ups on your TV, you know, not great for Kyle Hendricks, right? A guy that's pitching to contact in a lot of times, like, and deliberately trying to get bad swings that in that particular year were turning into home runs somehow, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that's the case with Franmil, but just something I guess to consider. I bring that up because, like, you know, the strikeout number in Cleveland was around 37%. It's around 30% for the Cubs. So he has cut that down pretty significantly, but the power just isn't there in the way that you need it to be for the type of player that he is.
No, I mean, in the month of September, he only has one extra base hit, and it's a double, right? And the strikeout rate is back to 35%. The whiff rate's down to 38%. So it's not good, right? It's just a matter of what the offseason plans are. And if ultimately they want to have more flexibility on the roster for DH purposes and positional purposes, then I can see them not wanting to bring back Franmil. But if there's a need for more pop, if there's a need for someone who can hit lefties in a certain particular matchup, then $4.5 million seems like a pretty obvious logical contract for someone like Franmil. It just remains to be seen what they do this offseason before you can say indefinitely, yes, bring back Franmil. And maybe this does change the offseason plans for the Cubs, but even if he were to continue his hot stretch, I think there is a sense of uncertainty that Jed would have felt that may have still precluded to give Franmil a significant role for this team next season if the goal is to go out and win the division, which it should. So we'll never know, but I still think it's worth giving Franmil a shot, not knowing what the plans are.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, you know, some other thoughts, if they're looking for power, I know a certain guy in the minors that just did not stop hitting home runs. So maybe something to consider
you know,
as well.
He's there as well.
In Alexander Canario.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, and another guy too, Matt Mervin, right, hitting a lot of home runs, you know, both of them.
They do have a lot of decisions to make on who they're going to commit roster space to and how they're going to do it. We've talked in the last few off seasons because I remember at this point, I don't remember when he said it, but Jed Hoyer has talked about, you know, not always getting prospects in trades with the intention of them playing for you, but also sometimes to have that depth that maybe you use in a trade.
I haven't really
seen him do that. And from the minute he said it, I was like, okay, well, when is this going to happen? Because he's talking about it. So, this offseason certainly seems like a time, if you wanted to sell high on some guys, you have the opportunity to do so.
So are you implying to trade Canario or Mervis?
I'm not. I don't know how much money they have to spend. I don't know how this is all going to play out. So I don't want to get boxed into certain things. But I'm just saying he's talked about it before. You're looking to kind of turn this team, kind of start veering towards competitive and making the playoffs again and all that stuff. Hopefully that's a way to do it, right? You know, we've talked about how so much of the offensive talent in particular is at certain positions in this free agent class. Well, if you need to address other positions, that's one way to do it, right?
No doubt.
And, you know, at some point you're going to have to decide, like, you can't play all of these prospects, right? They're not all going to come up at the exact same time, but even just looking at where all of them play, right? You've got a ton of outfield prospects. You've got a lot of middle infield prospects, et cetera. Like, you have to kind of decide, like, who's in your vision for the next great Cubs team, or who do you really view, like, being that, you know, next core of guys, because it can't be 15 of them, right? It doesn't work that way.
Well, almost, if we're going to talk about, like, unequivocal disappointment, I think Nelson Velasquez this season has been that. So in almost 200 plate appearances, he has a 272 weighted on base average. He's been worth negative 0.3 wins above replacement. He's striking out a lot, not walking that much, not hitting for batting average. The power's down. He had such a great AFL last season, and he did so well throughout the minors. I'm pretty disappointed to see him do this. And the disappointment is not just for the Cubs on the team level, but also, as to your point, as like trade value as well. So that if we're going to talk about trade value and disappointments on the current team, I think Velasquez has been unfortunately a big disappointment.
I think that's fair. He's in that tough spot where it's you know, he's got inconsistent playing time, right? And it's tough to prove it. But as we talked about with other guys, you do have to figure out a way to prove it in the time that you get, right? So I don't know if I feel like he got as fair of a look as other guys, or as maybe you'd really want him to get, but sometimes that opportunity isn't there, and you have to kind of prove it in the opportunity you're given. However easy or difficult a spot that may be.
And it goes to show you the volatility of these guys, right? Like, you may have guys who go off in the AFL, who go off in AA, go off in AAA, and they come up and they're outmatched. We've seen that with, like, Zach McKinstry. We've seen that with, you know, so many guys in years past. Like, Frank Schwindel is an example of doing well in AAA, comes up, has some success, but can't sustain it. And that might be applied to the thinking with Matt Mervis and Canario, and perhaps Jed does not want to risk that.
Yeah.
He wants certainty. And the way to mitigate that type of that instability is to maybe accept a lower ceiling, but you raise your floor. And the way to do that is you trade these guys away and try to bolster your team free agency.
Well, and I mean, Brendan, you know, one thing I am certain of is that Shohei Ohtani and Carlos Correa and Xander Bogaerts and Trea Turner, I am certain that they're good players. So
Aaron Judge, perhaps.
You know,
never talk about Judge.
Hey, look, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like I don't know. Do I see the Yankees letting him go? I don't know. I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't really either, but you never know.
As I've said, if you want to, I tweeted this, but Pat Hughes will have to go shopping. I don't know how long. I don't know if they make like industrial tape measures that stretch, you know, over 500 feet. But if Judge shows up at Wrigley, Pat's going to need a bigger tape measure. I'm here for it, obviously. But hefty does not begin to describe the home runs envision him hitting at Wrigley
Field.
You need
six more hefties to describe that.
Right. It's like, I don't know, the biggest, if Hefty Trash Bags has a nuclear brand, just a dumpster sized hefty is what we need for.
Well, you just gave Hefty a new brand idea.
I mean, like one of those windy days, it's blowing out at Wrigley Field. I mean, he's going Glenn Allen Hill territory. Like,
I mean,
every other
hit the
day.
Ball over the scoreboard. Yeah, it's crazy.
Oh boy, we're talking ourselves into some stuff.
Ohtani, Judge, Bogaerts, bring them all.
Is Jason Hayward the new owner of the Cubs yet? Is he spending money? Somebody tell me what's going on here.
Jason Hayward, the savior for this franchise, right, Corey. Okay, so let's preview this upcoming series against the Cincinnati Reds, Corey. So We have the Reds on Friday afternoon start time, your traditional 1:20 p.m. start time, the last Friday 1:20 p.m. start time of the season. Ashcraft will be pitching for the Reds that day. He's 5-4, a 4.18 ERA. We have Adrian Sampson, who has a 3-5 record, a 3.23 ERA, hoping to continue that quantity of quality starts that we've seen from Sampson recently. And then on Saturday, the Cubs have not announced a starting pitcher. Maybe we'll hear more about Justin Steele. It sounds as if they're going to shut him down, but that's not like 100% certain yet. But maybe that spot open is for Steele coming back for one more outing. We'll see. Lodolo is pitching for the Reds that day. He's 4-7 with a 3.75 ERA. 1:20 p.m. start time. Again, if I didn't say that. And then on Sunday, the last game against the Reds, that game starts at 1:20 p.m. Again, Marcus Stroman will pitch for the Cubs. He's 5-7, 3.66 ERA, looking to continue his recent success. And he'll be facing Anderson for Cincinnati, who is 2-3 with a 4.7 ERA. And then just to finish this up, that's the last homestand for the Cubs. So they'll go to Cincinnati after this, which is weird to end the season like this. You have Cincinnati coming to Wrigley, and then the Cubs go to Cincinnati to finish off the season. But that's the way the season will end. And maybe, you know what, win every game. I think that's possible. Let's go on like a seven games they have left, whatever it is, and finish with a 77 win record, Corey.
Yeah, I think really what we're looking for here as we get down to the final few series of the season is just for everybody to finish strong. I think at this point, you know, you're talking about, what is it, six more games? Like,
yeah, six more games, not seven.
You don't have too much of an opportunity for anybody to really, like, I think the Cubs know what they have in a lot of these guys. They've seen a lot from most of these guys.
It's basically over.
I don't think even a heater for some of these guys on offense in the last six games. You know, I think Jed Hoyer and his group, they kind of have an idea of what they have, what these guys can do, the roles they might play, et cetera. So to me, it's just, you know, finish healthy and finish strong. They're winning games. They're pitching really well. And I think we go back to like that Nico Horner quote about showing what this team can do and showing the position that they're in as they get ready to maybe pitch to some free agents and try to build a new culture of winning here after a couple of losing seasons. And you just want to continue that as you finish here. Finish the year strong, finish on a good note. You have everybody in the organization feeling like you're kind of on the come up and building up to something. And, you know, then of course it's on ownership and the front office to execute whatever their plan is in this off season. And we'll see what that is, but it's nice to finish on a high note, right? There were times during this season where this team was losing 10 games at a time, right? And that's just, you know, that's not how you want to finish a season. Even if we were able to look at individual performances and be pleased with guys or excited about guys, that's still a sour note just around the team and the organization, just constant losing. And I think this version is better. When we're sitting here talking about where they're ranking in the top five of starting rotation ERA in the second half and sweeping teams that are trying to make the playoffs and their record against, you know, good teams in the NL East division and stuff like that, like, that's, I think, the conversation you want to be having. It feels more the conversation you want to be having when you're on the cusp of something, right? Which I hope is what we are, Brendan. So
yeah, I mean, for the first time, it feels like, you know, the super dark days are behind us.
That's what we are all deciding to believe.
Famous last words.
Yep.
but I mean, to end the season like this, above 500 in the second half, it feels like for the first time in a year and a half, I feel optimistic, Corey. That's where I'm at with this.
Oh boy,
it's dangerous.
Prayers
though. I don't know if that's a good thing.
Yeah, no, I know Cody's in the same boat. I know a lot of you are hope maybe in the same boat. Maybe some of you are more pessimistic. I don't know. It's just what I believe, but I'm an idiot. And so I'm prepared to get my heart broken. I just hope that some of these quotes aren't useful, like at the next trade deadline, like you saying 2 minutes ago, the dark days are over. Like, all right, we'll see.
I'm not even going to say it. We're not going dark.
We don't have to. We all know where you're thinking.
I almost did.
All right, so that is what we have for you. Hope you enjoy your weekend. Hope you enjoy the last weekend of the season at beautiful historic Wrigley Field. As always, we appreciate you supporting CHGO and everything going on there using code CHGO when you sign up at PointsBet to help support us. And of course, listening to, downloading, supporting, watching, however you are consuming the CHGO Cubs podcast, we appreciate it. That is all we have for you. Brendan and I will talk to you again after the Cubs finish up this series this weekend on Sunday. And as always, go Cubs.